for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Most doctors say routine mammograms for women over 40 are the best way to beat breast cancer. But erring on the side of caution when it comes to treatment, as many women and their doctors typically choose to do, has some risk as well. Joining me to talk about routine breast cancer screening, Shannon Brownlee of the New America Foundation, from a studio in Cambridge, Dr. Daniel Copans, professor of radiology at Harvard Medical School, and from a studio in Hanover, New Hampshire, Dr. Gil Welch, professor of medicine at Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Research. I look forward to hearing your questions and comments. Join us, 800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning to all of you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Again.
Nice to be with you.
Dr. Copans, let me start with you. I know you actually invented 3D mammography. Tell us about the technique, what it does, and how it works.
First of all, thanks, Diane, for having me on. Just a general statement, I think all major medical groups now agree that mammography screening reduces the death rate from breast cancer. And a number of years ago, we started to try and improve on standard mammography. As you know, digital mammography was developed, and once digital detectors became available, we could apply a technique called tomosynthesis to the breast. As you pointed out, I need to disclose I did invent this, so I'm quite biased. But essentially, a standard two-dimensional mammogram is like looking at for a radiologist, is like looking at a book with clear pages. You can hold the book up to a light and see all the words on the pages, but they are superimposed one on the other. On a standard mammogram, all the breast tissue from one side of the breast is superimposed all the way across the breast, and it can hide cancers or even make it look like someone may have a cancer when it's just superimposed normal tissue. Tomosynthesis, by taking a few low-dose images from different angles and having a computer synthesize the pages in the book, allows us to look at each page individually. Mm-hmm. What that does is two things. First of all, it helps unmask cancers that may be hidden on a two-dimensional mammogram. And the second advantage is that it reduces the so-called false positive rate. It reduces the findings that we see on a two-dimensional mammogram that we might be concerned about, but that turn out to be nothing more than normal breast tissue superimposed. Those are eliminated by tomosynthesis. So digital breast tomosynthesis essentially will increase our ability to find small cancers and at the same time reduce the false positives.
All right. Two questions. First, is there additional radiation exposure compared to traditional mammograms? And second, is there a greater cost to 3D mammography?
Well, at the present time, there is a little bit more of an increased dose because the first company to get Food and Drug Administration approval, the requirement was to obtain the standard two-dimensional mammograms and then in addition do the tomosynthesis study. What is right around the corner and actually under review by the Food and Drug Administration now is to eliminate the need for the standard two-dimensional mammograms and basically reconstruct them from the tomosynthesis images, and that looks like it's going to be very, very good. So ultimately, the dose will not be greater than a two-dimensional standard mammogram. With regard to cost, that's entirely up to the companies and also the insurance companies in terms of what the machines will cost and then what the insurance companies will reimburse. I suspect there'll be an increased cost. It shouldn't be, from my perspective, very much, but that'll be determined by other people. I don't actually, no one asks my opinion about that.
Dr. Daniel Copans, he's professor of radiology at the Harvard Medical School. He did invent the 3D technology that allows 3D mammography. And turning to you, Shannon Brownlee, tell us about the incidence of breast cancer rates today and how those rates have changed over the last couple of decades.
Well, we've seen an increase in the rate of breast cancer in large measure because we screen for breast cancer. One of the more interesting aspects of that is that the kind of cancer that we're finding increasingly is something called DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ. And DCIS is really particularly problematic because it may be a very, very, very early form of cancer that might or might not become an actual cancer. So we are detecting a lot of that, rising rates of DCIS, and don't quite know what to do about it. Do you treat it? Do you do surgery on it? And in many cases, the DCIS is sort of scattered across different parts of the breast. And so it's one of the reasons women end up getting mastectomies, because it's too hard to take out all of those individual little lesions.
And what about the outcomes? Are women in general living longer with the disease?
So that's a little bit of a misleading way of measuring things. That's called survival. We talk about the 5-year survival rate a lot. And survival is affected by how early you detect a cancer. And if you're detecting a lot of cancer, things that we call cancer that didn't really need to be treated, things that would not have bothered the woman over the course of her life, then of course your 5-year survival rate looks really good. A more important measure is the population-based rate of death from breast cancer, and that has been declining. Now the question is, how much of that is due to screening, and how much of that is due to better treatment, and how much of it is due to the fact that fewer women are on hormone replacement therapy?
Shannon Brownlee, Director of the Health Policy Program at the New America Foundation. Turning to you, Dr. Gil Welch, we should say you are not a medical doctor. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. I'm a general internist, and I work at the White River Junction VA.
Forgive me. All right. And your study was published in the New England Journal of Medicine last month, which made the claim that the widespread use of mammograms is resulting in over-diagnosis of breast cancer. Explain.
Well, let me first start about what we're not talking about. We're not talking about diagnostic mammography, and that's the test we order when women become aware of a new breast lump. All doctors agree that's a good test to figure out whether the lump is something to worry about. The debate here is about screening mammography. That's inviting women in who have no reason to suspect anything's wrong and looking hard for something to be wrong. And one of the things we realize as we start looking for early forms of cancer is that a lot of people have them, and we're not sure which ones matter. And so we go ahead and treat all of them. And that's just simply led to a lot more cancer treatment. And in the study in the New England Journal, we were trying to get some sense of the scope of this problem. And for a screening test to work, it must not only find more early stages of cancer, it must also cause fewer late stages of cancer to be found. That is, demonstrating its ability to take those bad cancers and move them forward in time. Now, what we found is with the advent of screening mammography in women age 40 and older, we saw a dramatic increase in the number of women told they had cancer. It was about a 2-fold increase. unfortunately had little impact on the rate at which women were detected with late-stage cancer. And this combination of findings suggests a tremendous amount of overdiagnosis. That is, women who were told they had early-stage cancer, many of whom underwent surgery, chemotherapy, and/or radiation, for a cancer that was never destined to progress to late stage. In the last three decades, we estimate over a million women have been overdiagnosed. And despite all this screening, there's been no change in the rate at which women present with metastatic breast cancer. That's the worst kind. Those are the women we'd most like to help. And this suggests that mammography has little impact on the breast cancer death rate. I want to be clear, as Ms. Brownlee's already pointed out, the breast cancer death rate is falling in the United States. That's good news. Our research suggests, however, this largely reflects better treatment, not screening.
You know, it's interesting because recently we've been told that perhaps there's been overemphasis on finding prostate cancer in its early stages, and that many older men, upon death, the physicians, the autopsy indicates there has been prostate cancer. I'm not necessarily saying the two are comparable, but it's very interesting. We've got to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk further. The voice you just heard was that of Dr. Gil Welch, Professor of Medicine at Dartmouth Institute. Just before the break, you heard Dr. Gil Welch, who is a general internist at the White River Junction in Virginia and a professor of medicine at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Research, talking about the study he has just completed, and that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. You completed that by talking about 1 million cases of breast cancer as being over, or 1 million women as being overdiagnosed. How do we know that, Dr. Welch?
Well, overdiagnosis is awfully hard to observe directly. It's a little bit like a black hole. Physicists don't see black holes. They infer what's going on from the processes going on around them. And the same's true for overdiagnosis. When we see dramatic increases in incidence, and it's all early-stage disease, and we don't see a decrease in late-stage cancer, that's a pretty powerful signal. But I want to be clear, these are estimates. But the main point is this is a common problem. And I think for the last two, three decades, we've sort of systematically exaggerated the benefit of screening mammography, and we've downplayed, or worse, we've ignored entirely its harms. And the debate here is less about what women should do and more about whether women should be provided balanced information about the benefits and harms of screening. And the truth is, it's a really close call. You have to screen about 1,000 women age 50 for 10 years, and less than one will avoid a breast cancer death. That's the benefit side. It's less than one out of 1,000, and that number assumes even the best benefit found with mammography, about a 25 or 30% reduction in mortality.
So let me...
What I want to just say is, if only one's helped, I think it's important to at least pay attention to what happens to the other 999. And if I have time, I'll tell you a little bit about that.
Well, here's my question.
Okay.
Do you believe that breast cancer screening should be reduced in frequency? Do you believe it should be done away with altogether? Do you think it's a waste of money?
No, I don't think it should be done away with. What I think we need to do is tell women the truth. Tell them both sides of the story. And there are two sides to the story here. I believe there is the potential for benefit for very few women. And again, I think it becomes relevant for women making this choice to understand who's harmed. And in this country, of 1,000 women screened for 10 years, around 250 to 450 will have at least one false positive result. And about half of them will be biopsied. Some will describe it as the scariest time in their life. Some will never have the issue put to rest. They'll be told they don't have cancer, but they're not normal. They have atypia. They have dysplasia. They need to come back. And then somewhere between 4 and 10 out of that 1,000 will be overdiagnosed. Now, these women will undergo treatment. They will undergo chemotherapy, radiation, and or surgery for a breast cancer that was never going to bother them. Now, there's no right answer here. There are choices. And screening has been sort of promoted as a public health imperative. And I think that's been wrong. I think it's wrong to measure doctors on the proportion of women which they are able to persuade or coerce into undergoing screening. I think we need a more balanced discussion about this.
All right. And to help with that balance, we're now going to hear from Dr. Wendy Berg, professor of radiology at the University of Pittsburgh. Good morning, Dr. Berg. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Diane. This is a very important issue, and I think the most important message that needs to get out to women is that, in fact, mammography screening is still their best opportunity to reduce their risk of dying from breast cancer.
All right. Let me ask you, from your perspective, what have we actually accomplished by pushing for regular mammograms?
Women who are screened have at least a 20% or 1 in 5 less risk of dying from breast cancer compared to women who don't have mammography screening. That is true. I think we actually are all in agreement that it is important that women be informed of the risks, the downsides to any screening test, but the fact remains that that breast cancer is one of the leading causes of death among young women. Women who may not see their child graduate from high school if they are diagnosed with advanced breast cancer. One of the things that gets lost in all of this discussion is that out of, on average, 11 women who are diagnosed with breast cancer, one of those will have their life saved because of the mammogram. 8 of those will have cancer diagnosed, but the mammogram will have found it earlier than if they had waited until they felt a lump. And their treatment will be less extensive, less involved, less chemotherapy, less mastectomy than if they had waited and not had screening.
All right, but that is the question. Is there over-treatment of these extremely early diagnoses?
Well, again, on average, about 2 out of those 11 do represent over-treatment. And I think one, again, important distinction, we don't know that something we see on a mammogram is cancer or not until we do a biopsy. We see something, it's suspicious, we need to make a diagnosis. At that point, we do have a choice, and I think we're getting better with the information the oncologists and the surgeons have to reduce over-treatment. But really, it's at that point that we make a decision about what needs to happen with that individual's cancer.
Then that's the other question. Do you or have you begun using 3D mammography?
We do. We've been using it at the University of Pittsburgh for over a year.
And do you believe it's assisted you in sorting out those images that you may find which need treatment from those which do not?
Again, we use imaging to find cancers, and the decision about how to treat them comes after the finding. It is not possible to distinguish until a biopsy is done which cancer needs treating from which does not, and even that is very early. We're very early in the science of reducing the treatment to very early minimal cancers that may not progress.
All right. So, Dr. Berg, at this point, with all the research that has been done, with what you've heard this morning, tell me what advice you give to women and why.
I think the most important thing is information. I think we're getting better about informing women of the limitations of mammography, including women who have denser breast tissue where the mammogram could hide it. Not only 3D mammography will help with that, but also ultrasound. And in women who are at very high risk for breast cancer, MRI can help us find earlier cancers in those situations. We may make a much greater impact in reducing the deaths from breast cancer with this added screening, but it will come at the cost of additional testing and additional biopsies. And I do think this dialogue, this discussion, and recognition of the risks of false positives is important. A woman needs that information. She also needs to push that we get better with screening and not back off of something that we know actually helps. We can do better than what we've been doing.
All right. And now I want to bring Dr. Copans back into the discussion. Dr. Copans, you've heard Dr. Welch, you've heard Shannon Brownlee, and what they seem to be saying is that many of these cancers discovered in their very early stages are perhaps being over-treated. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I have to say, Diane, it's been a little difficult sitting here listening to some of the information. The estimates in the New England Journal of Medicine article suggesting massive overdiagnosis are just that. They're estimates, and they're based on assumptions that are incorrect. The amount of overdiagnosis is actually much, much lower. I think Dr. Berg was much more accurate in saying, sure, there are cancers that may never be lethal. We don't know which ones they are. I think I would agree certainly with Ms. Brownlee that ductal carcinoma in situ is a lesion that has been controversial for many, many years. There's a huge debate going on how to best to treat it. And I think that's nothing new. The problem with the New England Journal of Medicine paper was that it combined women with ductal carcinoma in situ and women who had early invasive breast cancer. Early invasive breast cancer, no one debates, is potentially a lethal tumor, and it's the detection of early invasive cancers that saves lives. If the paper in the New England Journal of Medicine had not grouped ductal carcinoma in situ, and no one else does that. It was a very unusual thing to do. I don't know why it was published. If you just look at early invasive cancers and use the correct projected incidence of breast cancer. You know, breast cancer, invasive cancers, have been increasing by 1% per year since 1940. No one knows why. It was long before there was any screening mammography. And had the New England Journal of Medicine paper used that incidence, 40 years of increasing at 1% per year, they would have found that, in fact, there's no excess of early invasive cancer. So the suggestion that there are tens of thousands of cancers that are overdiagnosed, if we exclude ductal carcinoma in situ, that's just not true. So I think we need to start with facts. I completely agree women need to be provided with facts. Facts need to be accurate. I just would make one other point, well, two other points.
Hold on one second. Well, Dr. Kopentz, let me just remind our listeners, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Go ahead, Dr. Kopentz.
Yeah, I think it's important, again, this paper was based on assumptions and estimates. It was not based on actual direct patient measurements. They don't even know which women had their cancers found by mammography. So I think we need to, put that paper aside as not being particularly scientific. A couple of other points.
Hold on. I think I'm going to bring in Dr. Welch and let him comment on your statement that this paper is based on assumptions and estimates and not true cases and therefore should never have been published. Dr. Welch.
Well, I appreciate the chance to respond. Let's make sure we understand what the underlying data are. They're the federal government's data. It is the most carefully collected data on incidence and mortality available, really, in the world. It's a very good database. Let's deal with just a couple of the concerns raised by Dr. Kopentz. One of the major ones is, why is ductal carcinoma in situ included? It sounds like he is ready to acknowledge that most of that we already agree is overdiagnosis. Well, if that's true, why are we treating it as invasive breast cancer? Because the data show that, in fact, we are treating ductal carcinoma in situ almost as aggressively as we're treating invasive breast cancer.
All right, Dr. Welch,
I want to just go right there and bring
in Shannon Brownlee. Oh. Is that true from your perspective?
From what I understand, yes. DCIS is being treated quite aggressively, and it puts women in a real quandary because, you know, they hear carcinoma and they think cancer, and when their clinician isn't sure about the best way to treat them, the tendency is often to say, let's treat it aggressively as if it were a scary cancer.
All right. And Daniel Kopentz, why don't you respond to that?
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement that ductal carcinoma in situ is an important question that needs and is being addressed by multiple investigators around the world to try and determine what the best way to treat it is. I think if we eliminate ductal carcinoma in situ from the discussion, and I think we should because that's been going, this is nothing new. This is a major issue in breast cancer care for decades now, and people are working very hard on it. The remainder, where does mammography screening actually benefit women? The main area is in finding early invasive cancers. And I would also take issue with the suggestion that you have to reduce the rate of advanced cancers in order for mammography to be beneficial. Mammography does reduce the rate of advanced cancers, and I think in the New England Journal of Medicine paper, they also underestimated that. Again, these were not direct measurements from patients. These are summary data from databases, so we don't know, again, who actually had mammography and who didn't.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there, Dr. Kopentz, and let Dr. Welch respond.
I guess I want to respond to two things. One, we think there's overdiagnosis in invasive breast cancer as well. It's not as large as ductal carcinoma, certainly, but if we assume all ductal carcinoma in situ cases are overdiagnosed, we still would have about half of the early stage invasive breast cancers representing overdiagnosis. But I just want to step back to this model here that where we're always looking for earlier and earlier forms of cancer. And I want to at least introduce some hesitancy about that. I have no doubt that we can enhance our technologies and see and find more abnormalities. There's no question we can do that. The question is that a good thing? And I think one of the things people are rethinking in cancer screening is the goal really to find the most cancer, or is the goal to find the right cancer?
Dr. Gil Welch, he is a general internist at the White River Junction, Virginia. He's also professor of medicine at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy. Short break, right back.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. By the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment, supporting strategic communications and collaboration to address the world's pressing environmental problems. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
A new study says repeated head injuries can lead to permanent brain damage. The research questions the safety of contact sports, especially football. The long-term effects of head injuries. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. As we talk about the value of mammography, annual screening, less frequent screening, more frequent screening, here is our first email from Mitch, who says, would you please address the huge investment and large revenues currently linked to providers of screening and treatment services, and how that could bias the national discussion. Wonder if you could address that, Shannon Brownlee.
You know, he's absolutely right. We've made an enormous financial investment in both screening for cancer, including breast cancer, and in treatment. Hospitals make a lot of money screening and treating cancer, and I don't think for a second that physicians are saying, oh, I'm going to make more money if I do this, but because we've also got this enormous intellectual and emotional investment in it. So it's very difficult to imagine doing things differently. But the opportunity cost here, I think, is that in having this enormous investment and looking for sort of son of mammography, more and more and more refined mammography, we may be missing an opportunity to think much more carefully about how not to treat, which cancers we don't need to treat, because treatment is expensive, but it also has harms for patients.
All right, let's take our first caller, Anne, who's in San Antonio, Texas. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. In 2011, I was 69 and started to skip my normal annual screening because of a lot of the information. No history on either side of the family. A suspicious pattern was found. I had a needle biopsy, was told everything was normal. My internist said she had never seen the speculated pattern that I had without it being cancer, so she insisted on an excisional biopsy. It was cancer. After my mastectomy and genetic testing, they discovered I had five small but very aggressive triple negative breast cancer, which is very unusual for someone in my age. And of course, I then went on and had treatment. So I am one of the outliers. I am one of the ones that am so grateful that I had the screening.
Dr. Welsh, do you want to comment?
Well, I'm very glad for Anne, and that's great. I think we have to be really careful about the power of individual stories because different stories have multiple interpretations. I certainly hope she was helped by the mammogram, and I really do. But the reality in general, when we hear survivor stories following mammographic detection, we have to recognize they may actually represent the harm that people who have been told they have cancer unnecessarily. I'm not saying that's the case in Anne's case, but as we hear these survivor stories, we have to remember they may be women who have been helped. They may also be women who would have done just as well with clinical detection, or more surprisingly, they may be the women who've been harmed.
Harmed how?
Harmed because they were overdiagnosed. They were treated for a cancer that was never going to bother them.
All right. Here's an email from Brandy, who says, I work for a genetics lab. I am working with oncologists daily, and until we can accurately say who has a dangerous type and who does not, because more and more tests are being developed for this, isn't it tough to say who will benefit and who will not? Dr. Copanz.
I think that's a very, accurate statement. What I think may be lost in this discussion is that there's been a huge amount of effort ongoing to try and tailor treatment to an individual's cancer. And it's not just that the breast cancers are different, but our own bodies respond differently to different cancers. And there's a great deal of effort going on to try and, as I say, pick the right treatment for the right cancer. At this point in time, we're not very good at that. That doesn't mean we should stop saving lives. Mammography screening clearly saves lives. As I mentioned, and we don't have time to go into the details, I think the estimates of overdiagnosis are grossly exaggerated. If we and even DCIS, there's some suggestion that removing DCIS lesions has actually contributed to fewer invasive cancers. Mammography screening reduces or finds cancers at a smaller size within stages, and that saves lives. All of the data show that it saves lives, and all of our medical treatment, quite frankly, for everything we do, we over-treat, if you will, because we don't know who is going to respond to an antibiotic, for example, whose life will be saved by having an antibiotic versus who may be made sicker by an antibiotic, either an adverse reaction or some other problem. So
all right.
I hope your audience knows that screening saves lives and the overdiagnosis rate is pretty low.
All right. Dr. Welch, earlier I asked you whether there were any parallels between the insistence on PSAs for men to detect prostate cancer and the fact that many people die at an old age and prostate cancer is found on autopsy. Is there any parallel here in your own mind?
Absolutely. There are parallels. The general problem of overdiagnosis is best understood in prostate cancer screening. We're just now beginning to recognize it's a more general feature of early cancer detection. Whenever we look hard for early forms of cancer, we find more cancer than we expected. And we now know that many people die with small cancers, not from those cancers. And so it's what makes screening a two-edged sword. It does have the opportunity to help some people, but it also leads others to be treated needlessly. And that's why we can't always look harder and harder for earlier and earlier forms of disease.
All right, let's
embrace shared decision-making in men in prostate cancer screening, and we probably should do the same in breast cancer screening.
All right, let's take a caller in Boone, North Carolina. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Diane. Uncle Doug here in Boone, North Carolina, and I really appreciate this show. My mother is 86 years old. She lives with me. She has dementia and Alzheimer's. She wouldn't have lived this long to have dementia and Alzheimer's if there hadn't been a mammogram test in her 40s. I've got a sister that lives in Destin, Florida. She's had breast cancer twice. You know, this DCIS test, wonderful. Use the tool. But don't ever get rid of the mammogram and do it more frequently. Use all the tools that you have. I mean, you've got some callers there, or you've got some speakers there that are female. And what if they had this and they skipped a mammogram test? You know, we need all the females on planet Earth.
All right. Thanks for calling, Shannon Brownlee.
Once again, you know, anecdotes are very persuasive and emotional, but you can't say for any individual necessarily that the mammogram is really the thing that should be credited for this man's mother surviving to 86. So we have to really be careful of those anecdotes, number one. Number two, not all women who know a lot about mammograms get mammograms.
What do you mean?
I don't get mammograms. I don't do mammograms. Now, I may do a mammogram or two in my 60s when it looks like the benefit is greatest, but I don't do mammograms. And
why not?
Because I am more worried about being harmed by unnecessary treatment. I'm very worried about being harmed by unnecessary treatment, by overdiagnosis.
Dr. Berg, what do you say to Shannon Brownlee?
I think one important piece of information is that of the women who still die from breast cancer today, 3 out of 4 of those women never had screening. And I bet you that each one and every one of those wishes they had.
Shannon Brownlee?
That's more anecdote. It's
no,
women
it's
wishing.
Actually based
women
on
wishing.
Population studies.
Well, that's what we're talking about here, though,
yes,
is
I
the
know.
Population and studies. And
Dr.
so,
Dr. Welch did not account for whether these women had screening or did not have screening who had advanced disease, and this is one of the issues. Randomized trials have shown that mammography saves lives. Yes, you can't attribute it to a given individual, but you certainly know at the population level that it reduced breast cancer mortality. We also know that the women who are still dying from breast cancer, most of those women did not have screening.
All right, Dr. Welch.
Yeah, I want to bring up the randomized trial issues, and it's true. We have about 9 randomized trials involving over 500,000 women, and their central estimate of the benefit is about a 15% reduction in mortality. We'll call it 25 if you want. It's still less than 1 in 1,000 being screened over 10 years. But we have reason to believe that the randomized trials no longer tell us the current benefit of screening. And the reason is our treatments are better. And ironically, the better our treatment gets, the less important early detection becomes. That's the reason we don't screen for pneumonia, because we can treat pneumonia.
All right, to Mount Dora, Florida. Good morning, Ross.
Good morning, Diane. I'm thoroughly enjoying this discussion as a physician assistant and a cancer survivor myself. But I've also have to question, because I have a good friend, a surgeon friend, who says that if what you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And it would seem that radiologists in the discussion are saying, oh, yes, we've got to have more and better mammography. And others are pulling back and saying, yeah, but what about the negative aspects of overtreatment or overdiagnosis? And I agree, PSA screening is another excellent parallel. But I haven't heard anybody mention the other things that can decrease morbidity and mortality from breast cancer, simply the decrease in hormonal birth control or decrease in smoking habits and so on. And I'd like your panel to address these other public health measures, which actually may have a greater impact on women's health.
All right, sir. Thanks for calling, Shannon Brownlee.
The caller is absolutely right. Sure. That we know a few of the things that contribute to a woman's risk of getting breast cancer, one of them being genetics, but also smoking, obesity, use of hormone replacement seems to increase your risk a little bit. So we do have ways of reducing the overall risk of getting it. And, you know, it's really important to look at the fact that we really do have better treatments. We do have better treatments. And women who get breast cancer are more likely to live in large measure because of that.
Dr. Copenz, let me ask you whether through 3D mammography, you are clearly better able to judge which tumors need treatment and which do not. And let me just remind our listeners, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Dr. Copenz.
Diane, just one quick point, and then I'll answer that question. The argument is being made that it's therapy that's saving lives, and there's no question therapy has improved over the past years. But what you'll find is that there's no major medical oncology group, and neither Dr. Welch or Ms. Brownlee are medical oncologists. There are no major medical oncology groups that have said you can stop screening, therapy will save all lives. The medical oncologists know that therapy saves lives when you find breast cancer early. In terms of digital breast tomosynthesis, I think Dr. Berg stated it really very clearly that we can see more cancers. We'll find more cancers at a smaller size. But it still requires a pathologist looking under the microscope at tissue to accurately differentiate a cancer from a non-cancer, and hopefully someday, and we're not at that point for most cancers, be able to determine which cancers need what type of therapy.
What are the current guidelines, Dr. Berg?
The current guidelines for screening?
Yes.
Would be from most of the major medical associations to start getting annual mammograms at age 40. It's reasonable to discuss with your doctor what the risks are, what the risk of having a biopsy or extra testing is, and to continue annual mammograms as long as you're in good health. We don't recommend annual mammograms if a patient has less than 5 years of life expectancy. We can certainly cut down on some of the unnecessary screening in women who are otherwise quite ill. But I think that women who are healthy, who want to reduce their risk of dying from breast cancer, should get an annual mammogram starting at age 40.
Dr. Welch, what would be your recommendation?
Well, I think this is a choice. I think this is genuinely a close call. And Dr. Copenz appeals to the oncology community, and let's be clear, the oncology community is beginning to be more open to this general problem. Even the American Cancer Society, who has been the most aggressive, one of the more aggressive proponents of screening, now recognizes that overdiagnosis is a matter worthy of attention and that women should be informed of the risks and benefits that are associated with cancer screening. So this is a choice. And I think the real goal here is to make sure we don't make women feel like they have to have this test.
All right.
This is not something they have to have.
Dr. Copenz, what would be your recommendation?
Well, Diane, I've always argued based on scientific evidence, and the scientific evidence clearly indicates that screening beginning at the age of 40 saves lives. I think every medical intervention has risks. And
you're saying an annual mammogram.
Annual mammography.
And Shannon Brownlee, I think I know your recommendation.
And I think this is a choice. I think women need to understand the potential for benefit and the potential for harm, and they need to be able to make the choice that's right for them.
Shannon Brantley of the New America Foundation, Dr. Daniel Kopans, he's at the Harvard Medical School, Dr. Gil Welch, he's a general internist at the White River Junction, Vermont, and a professor of medicine at Dartmouth. And finally, we also have a radiologist who has been with us, Dr. Wendy Berg at the University of Pittsburgh. Thanks to all of you. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rain.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations.